Welcome to the My Money Podcast number 112 from helpmetosave.com. I'm Karen Bryan, the editor of the Help Me to Save website, where you'll find tips to help you save money, spend less, and enjoy life. In this edition of the My Money Podcast, I'm going to discuss my recent article on tips on planning for your retirement. Now, don't switch off and think, oh no, I'm too young, too far in the future, I can't afford that, I can't understand it. Your life, your money, your future, your retirement, it really is a good idea to think seriously about it from a young age and have a plan, an aim of what you're looking for income-wise in your retirement. Certainly seems to me that the average person is pretty bamboozled by the complexity of pensions in the UK. You almost have to learn a different language to try and understand it. All the terms aren't always self-explanatory. But this confusion over pensions is borne out by the fact that recent research carried out among people aged 55 to 64, so in the pre-retirement group, for the financial services company Legal & General uncovered that 53% of interviewees said they had received either poor or no financial education, 33% of interviewees said they didn't understand annuities, that is where you use your pension pot to buy an income for life, and 26% of interviewees said that they didn't understand how personal pension plans can be accessed. Now, I actually thought the percentages might be higher, but anyway. To help address the issue, Legal & General held a Google Hangout, which is a video chat, in which a panel of experts answered questions on retirement and pensions. The questions were submitted via Twitter and Facebook. So after watching that video, and based on my own research and personal experience, I collated my tips on planning for your retirement. Now, tip one is to make the most of the free money on offer. If people saw a sign free money, they'd be flocking there. But I don't think when people see pensions, they flock there and think, oh no. However, you can get your pension significantly boosted through tax relief. Basic rate taxpayers receive 20% tax relief on any pension contributions on 100% of their earnings up to the maximum of £40,000 a year. This means that if you pay £80 into a pension, the government will add £20 so that your contribution becomes £100. Even if you're a non-earner, you can pay up to £2,880 a year, which will be topped up to a total of £3,600 through tax relief. On top of this, most employees are automatically enrolled into the National Employment Savings Trust, called NEST, Workplace Pension Scheme. Under this scheme, employees contribute 4% of their wages, employers contribute 3%, and tax relief makes up another 1%. Therefore, employees, if you pay in a certain amount into your pension, that amount which you pay in could be almost doubled through the combination of employer contributions and tax relief. However, as I'm self-employed, they were only my own contributions topped up with tax relief going into a pension pot. So if I'd been paying in under a NEST, a similar scheme to NEST, there would have been employer's contribution, which would have meant my pot would have been a lot bigger. My other big tip is to start early. The younger you are when you start paying into a pension, the more years you can pay in and the longer the pension pot has to grow in value through compound interest. I only started paying into a personal pension when I was in my late 30s. I do wish I'd started earlier. But, you know, having a young family, being self-employed, I only started to think in my late 30s, oh, I have to get on track for a pension. Obviously, if I'd started 15, 16, 17 years earlier, I could have built up a much bigger pension pot. The other tip is to pay in as much as you can afford. There's always a reason not to pay more into your pension. You're not earning enough, it's decades until you retire, you're paying back your student loan, you've got young kids, always reasons for it. But if you don't pay in enough, your retirement is likely to be pretty frugal if it's funded mainly by the state pension. Again, I wish that I'd paid in more to my pension, but at that time, it already felt that I was paying in a large proportion of my net income, and I couldn't access that money until I was 55, you know, 17, 18 years in future was quite a long time, and I was thinking, oh, well, I'm putting something in, which was better than nothing, but it could have been a lot more, it should have been a lot more. You should aim to qualify for your full state pension. From April 2016, you'll need to have 35 years of national insurance contributions or credits to be eligible to receive a full state pension. That's an increase from the current 30 years. You can pay voluntary contributions to make up for lost years. And again, if you knew how long you were going to live, you could work out if it was a good idea to pay the voluntary contributions. I believe at the moment for Class 1 employee national insurance contributions, it's around £700 mark to make up for each missing year. So say you'd missed 4 years and you paid the best part of £3,000 in. If you got an increased pension for 20, 30 years, it would be a good investment. If you didn't live so long, it probably wouldn't have been a good idea to do it. So, whereas if you're working, you can't avoid the Class 1 national insurance contributions, so you're probably going to make it up to the full amount anyway. One thing you need to keep an eye out for on pensions, certain types of pensions, are fees and charges. Personal pensions can have an array of fees and charges which can seriously erode the value of your pension pot. There is now a 0.75% charge cap on default funds in the National Employment Savings Trust Nest pensions, where most employees are auto-enrolled. And a default fund just means that a limited number of funds that you kind of go into automatically. If you want something more specialised, you may have to pay a higher fee. That's just on the simplest default funds. And my experience, I had a stakeholder pension and I was paying 0.8% annual fee, which was slightly below the 1% cap allowed on stakeholder pensions taken out before the 1st of April 2005. The amount that could be charged on stakeholders did go up a bit after that. It's a good idea if you're aged 55 plus to get an appointment arranged with PensionWise, where you can get a free face-to-face or phone session for pension guidance. Now, guidance, not advice. So it's just going to be general ideas of what the options are. But it's advisable to do some preparation before your session with PensionWise, such as getting a state pension forecast, checking the value of any existing workplace or personal pensions, and thinking about the minimum income you'll need for a comfortable retirement. But as I emphasised, PensionWise can only signpost your options, not provide you with personal recommendations. My final tip would be to read up as much as possible, do as much research as you can on pensions, and get some personalised professional advice. It really is in your best interest to try to understand as much as possible about pensions. Your life, your money, you have to get to grips with it. If you're in what's called a defined benefit pension scheme, that means you know what you're going to get out of the pension. That would be, for example, a final salary or career average pension. You'll be able to work out what pension payment to expect based on years of service and pay. But you do need to be aware that personal pensions, and that includes the National Employment Savings Trust, the auto-enrolment Nest, don't have any guarantees of the pension income that you'll receive when you retire. It depends on the value of the funds in which your pension pot is invested, usually stock markets, bonds, where the values can go up and down. So you could do really well, especially in the few years before you retire, when your pension pot is at its largest, if equities, bonds, whatever your pension pot is invested in do well, end up with a bigger pension pot than you thought you would, and the opposite, if things go a bit pear-shaped, your pension pot could be worth quite a bit less. You don't have any guarantee of the size of your pension pot and what income you're going to get through your pension. As I mentioned earlier, there have been changes that just started at the beginning of the current tax year on the 6th of April 2015 over how you can access certain types of pensions. They're personal pensions. If you're in civil service, local authority pensions, it could be different rules. Some people will be allowed to transfer out into a personal pension, some won't. I can't go into all of that, and I haven't looked into that clearly, that carefully, because it doesn't affect me. I suppose I did more research on things that were directly related to me. So as it stands at the moment, once you're 55, you have these options for your personal pension pot. You can use it to buy an annuity. That will give you a guaranteed income for life. You could take up to 25% of the pension pot as a tax-free lump sum, use the remaining 75% to buy an annuity, or you could just put it all towards an annuity, give you a bigger income for life. You could take the whole pension pot as cash. The first 25% can be taken as a tax-free lump sum, same as when you buy an annuity, but the remaining 75% is taxable, as is an annuity. The annuity payment you get, it's income, it's, you know, you offset it against your personal allowance, if between pensions, earnings, whatever, you're above the threshold, you have to pay tax. But if you're going to take a lump sum out, tens or maybe even £100,000, you'll only get 25% tax free. What is left that you take out of the pension wrapper, you're going to have to pay tax on. So you could end up paying 40% income tax on some of it. Could be better maybe to spread taking out the cash over a few different tax years to minimise the amount of tax you pay. Now the other option open to you would be to leave the pension pot invested in the hope of further growth, and then draw income, called income drawdown, from that pension pot, take out money either on a regular and or flexible basis. Now you can either take the 25% tax-free lump sum before you move your pot into income drawdown, or receive 25% of each income drawdown payment tax-free. You don't have to choose one option or the other, you can go for a mix and match, more likely maybe if you've got a slightly bigger pension pot. You could, for example, use half your pension pot to buy an annuity and the other half for income drawdown. Now, I did a lot of reading before my 55th birthday, the earliest I could get my hands on the pension pot, just to think, what am I going to do? What's the best thing for me to do? I was under the old rules. I still didn't have to buy an annuity, but my plan was to buy an annuity, and even when the new rules were announced, I continued with my plan to buy an annuity, because that was the only way to guarantee an income for life. Once I started doing income drawdown, I thought, oh, take too little, don't get the benefit, take too much, maybe the pot runs out when I'm older, and certainly when I'm 80, if I don't have money, it's far harder to get a job when you're 80 than say when you're in your late 50s. Another reason I decided to go for annuity is that I'm self-employed, so I don't have a guaranteed income from work, so I thought an annuity would give me at least a few thousand income, which I knew I would receive every year. My earnings can go up and down, fair enough, but I could rely on the annuity. Now, I didn't just do my own research to try and get my head around the whole pensions thing. I also consulted an online independent financial advisor. He was able to draw up several options for me, and he reckoned that there was the potential to generate more income by going into an income drawdown plan. But I wanted the guaranteed income that only an annuity can offer. Another reason I was quite keen on an annuity was I didn't want to have to keep monitoring my pension pot, wondering should I leave it in a high-risk fund, medium risk, if I left it in cash, if inflation was high and after I paid charges, my pension pot would be losing spending power. But if I left it invested and the value dropped, then I would get less out of it than if I took the money out when the pension pot was at high value. I just really wanted a simple, clear resolution. But everybody's different. That was a decision I made based on my circumstances. It may well not have been the best decision financially, but it gave me peace of mind, and at least I understood what my options were. So I was working from a base of knowledge rather than just saying, oh, I'm just going to do that because I can't be bothered to understand it, or that seems simplest or whatever. So, yes, it's not the most thrilling of topics, but I do think it's a really good idea to try and understand what you're looking for from your pension. What are your goals, and what are you going to do to work towards that? Don't just say, oh, it's in the future, I can't afford it. Sit down, think about it, try to get to grips with it, and hopefully, take it from me, time passes pretty quickly, you'll have built up a good pension pot that will give you options to fund a comfortable retirement. So, if you've managed to listen to all of this, hopefully, maybe made you think a bit, picked up some tips on what your approach to pensions and retirement is going to be. You can read the article in full on the website at www.helpmetosave.com. You can subscribe to the My Money podcast in iTunes. So, thanks very much for listening, and do join me again soon for another edition of the My Money podcast. Goodbye.